Hey, how's it going? It's Keith Townsend, and you're listening to episode 89 of the CTO Advisor podcast. On the line, I have Mark May. Mark, how's it going?
Doing well, Keith. How you been?
You know, I've been good. It feels like we just talked to Chad like 2 minutes ago.
I know, man. Power of time.
Yeah, the power of time. But in podcast land, it's been a whole week. Chad, how's it going?
I'm doing great, guys. 89. You should feel very proud. That's incredible.
Yeah, that's a good number. It took a little while to get up to it, but 89 episodes of this thing. And
you know, we need to start planning a mega 100.
Yeah, we do need
all the guests that we've ever had on at the same time.
Guys, sign me up.
That will actually be good. It'll be interesting to know who I'm working for come the 100th podcast and how that's changed the podcast. That would be an interesting podcast. Yeah.
So speaking of job changes, Chad, you've got this new thing going on for a while now. You're at Pivotal.
Yeah, it was, you know, when I was thinking about what I wanted to do next in my career, it's funny, you know, it's only in those moments, Keith, we should talk, man. There's lots of opportunity at Pivotal. But, you know,
not a job interview.
Yeah, totally.
That's later.
So, tell me about your greatest strengths and weaknesses.
There you go.
give me a code sample. No, but I was thinking, what do I want to do next? You know, I'd been inside a big company for a lot longer than I had ever expected. So when I came into EMC, it was via an acquisition of a startup. And I thought I was just going to do startup after startup, you know, and I love working for smaller companies. And I ended up working at Dell EMC for 13 years because I fell in love with the company and the people and all that stuff. And over that time, I led, you know, the 4,000 SEs and you know, the roughly 2,000 people in $4.5 billion CPSD business. And I had learned about, you know, how to hopefully, I hope people would say, be a good leader to large organizations. But I kind of was going, you know what, I'd like to do something small again, because small and big are very different. And so I was looking around what I wanted to do. And one thing that was, you know, in my mind was I really believe that Dell Tech is a great place. And Michael's got a vision for what we're doing in the company. So as I was weighing, look, I could continue to work in Dell EMC, or I could do something at VMware, I could do something at Pivotal. And it was great to have support from Michael and Pat and Bill Scannell and Robbie at Pivotal. The one part of the company that gave me a chance to kind of learn a truckload of new stuff, you know, so stretch myself in new ways and challenge myself, to work in something smaller again, although Pivotal's, you know, pretty big for
small.
It's not that small, right? Was to join Pivotal. So the choice was kind of a no-brainer for me, because I got a chance to kind of do the startup-y thing and do it and explore new things in a place where I believe in Dell Tech is a larger company.
So let's probe at that a little bit. I mean, you came out of fastest growing parts of Dell EMC. Whatever initiated the change, you have created for yourself a pretty impressive resume. You know, as I look at the landscape, you have Hitachi.
Thanks, dude. You're making me blush.
But seriously, you look at Hitachi, NetApp, Nutanix to a lesser extent. In that market, what you had achieved, you could have pretty much looked outside of Dell EMC. I'm sure for what they could have made the finances work. What about Pivotal specifically made you say, you know what, above all the other opportunities, you know, I can get that smaller startup thing inside of another company. Those things could happen. What about the Pivotal opportunity made you say, you know what, you launched a new website, you've rebranded yourself.
Yeah, that's a big pivot.
That's a big pivot.
So
you know, you could have just played it safe.
So I've been an infrastructure guy my whole, you know, I'm an engineer, an electrical engineer in comp sci by schooling, but I've always been fascinated by the intersection of the tech and the customer. But just, you know, everyone's career has components where you know, you kind of like fall into it in a sense, right? And so, you know, my first job was working for an engineering firm, but I was an IT dude, right? Like deploying Novell, Novellware 3.1.1 NDS. It was very exciting when we went to 4.0, for those of you, you remember it. And, you know, IPX networking and all that jazz, right?
Get near server. Yeah.
So you remember that, right?
Oh, yeah, I do.
And so, yeah, we're getting old. Like, that's the moral of that story. But, you know, I kind of fell into being an infrastructure IT guy just by that first job that I was doing. And then, you know, I went to, you know, a series of startups, and the startups were infrastructure domain. And then I, in Dell EMC, I've been in the infrastructure domain. And the infrastructure domain's fascinating, but I realized whatever I do next, you know, you need some change in your life. So I was like, what is something that for me is a bold new frontier? And I realized, like, there's so much interesting stuff that's happening above the infra domain and the binding areas between the infrastructure domain and the application domain. So if you look at above the infra domain, what's happening inside application services, what's happening in functions, lambdas, event streams, what's happening in how people write software, what's happening in all of those domains. And then you have interesting stuff that is change in the mating surfaces. So the places where infra and apps meet, namely inside the Kubernetes and container ecosystem. And I'm like, that is interesting. Like, it's just, I don't know about you guys, but a big factor for me in what I do, you know, I'm thankful, and I've got a roof over my head, and I can put food on the table for my family and my kids. But once you pass a certain point, a big factor for most people, certainly for me, is you jump out of bed when you're learning something, you're growing, you're challenging yourself, and you're just curious. So, like, I'm curious about the domain. And so then if you think about it and said, okay, forget about Dell Tech, just forget about Dell Tech completely. And you said, what are the interesting companies that are out there that are focused on how people build new apps in new ways, changing the way that people write software? Who would you list?
There's a whole bunch of companies that I can't think of the name of.
So I'll give you a bunch, right? So there's a whole bunch of, like, Kubernetes startups that are...
Yeah, exactly. A ton of those.
There's a bunch of companies that are working on projects like Istio that are interesting. There's a bunch of companies that are doing stuff around something called low code or no code. Mendix is a really neat one where you use, like, you know, GUI-driven programming models, right?
Didn't they do that in that movie Hackers?
That's always how they show hacking, right? It's like, I'll grab this code snippet here and I'll grab it right. But Pivotal would be on that list.
Pivotal would be on that list. Whenever I focus on kind of like the infrastructure portions of what it takes to run Pivotal, people remind me, you know what, you're focusing on the wrong thing, because Pivotal is one of those technologies when you're talking about Cloud Foundry and all of the supporting parts of it that mm-hmm. really changes how applications are written. And really, when you talk about, I did an ebook for Normata, and we talked about using Kubernetes versus a full PaaS layer. And, you know, Pivotal is that quick on-ramp to being able to write cloud native applications, like, right out the box.
That really, I always call it like training wheels, right? You do it this way, it'll keep you focused. In the end, if you do what you're supposed to do, you'll end up with success, which is, I think, what a lot of people need when they're starting that journey, right? You could go a billion different ways, and having a clear path to walk is one of the reasons for success.
So it's fascinating, because if you look at it, Pivotal's history, you know, started with Cloud Foundry, and now that's just a part of it, right? So it's this application service that represents the curated training wheels that you describe, Mark, right? Which means a PaaS, a platform, says, give me your code and I'll take it from there. I'll not just compile it, but I'll build all the dependencies. I'll figure out how load balancing and routers work. I'll figure out how to containerize it. I'll figure out how to deploy it onto the IaaS. You just give me your source code.
Yeah, I call it the original serverless. When I first...
we've had that argument before.
Yeah, I had that. Me and Mark had this argument that I say, you know what, Pivotal is serverless, and Mark at the time didn't agree with me.
It's frustrating because, again, I said this on the last call. I'll keep saying it. People struggle with the word and. It's not or, right? So we think that you're going to have container as a service abstractions. You'll have PaaS, platform application services, as an abstraction. And you'll have functions and event, so FaaS, right? So serverless. And it was interesting because people get religion about one or the other, and it's invariably, you're going to use some Kubernetes, you're going to use some PaaS, you're going to use some functions. And the one thing that is true, however, is that the higher up the abstraction stack you can go, even all the way to SaaS, right? The faster you go and the more focused you are on the things that matter the most. Now, it doesn't mean you should put everything up in serverless or PaaS. There's lots of things that belong in containers and Kubernetes. That's why actually, you know, I'm really excited about what we're doing on PKS, what we're doing around PaaS, what we're doing around PFS. It's not going to be one or the other. It's going to be an and. I'll give you an interesting thing that I've just been watching another human being's journey. So you guys know Kelsey Hightower at Google.
Yep.
I mean, you've got to know at least of him, right?
Yeah, we've had him.
Oh, yeah, we've had him on the podcast before you joined. We were saying we just need to get Kelsey on again. It's been
he's legendary. Like, I admire that guy out the yin yang. I can't wait to get to know him better and meet him. But I follow him on Twitter, right? He wrote a tweet once that was interesting because he said, because, you know, he was one of the primary evangelists for Kubernetes. He basically said Kubernetes is a platform for building platforms. And people were like, whoa, you're blowing my mind. And he's right, which is that the container layer is a sub layer, like a Russian doll. If you're going to build, you know, functions, eventing, or platform service on top of it. But then the other thing that was interesting is he then went through his own journey where he's exploring functions and serverless. And he started to go, you know, if you look at his Twitter stream, he started to make comments like, man, ultimately the dream platform is one where you just give it your code and it runs it.
Yep.
And you know, it's interesting for someone who's been focused for so long on Kubernetes, what he just realized in that tweet was the power of the next abstraction up. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
so. Yeah. I mean, the further you move up that stack, the harder it is to think about it. But that's so, just always.
So, Mark, we had the CTO of New York Times on. And he talked about that pivot.
Nick Rockwell.
Yeah, Nick Rockwell. He talked about the difficulty of that pivot. You know, they built their Crossword app completely serverless. And one of the challenges he said he had to get organizationally is to get his developers, not the infrastructure folks, but his developers, to get them out of the weeds and getting them thinking at that higher level of abstraction. So, you know, whether it's Kubernetes or PaaS, trying to take, you know, when you take away the our toys of all the knobs, we get kind of upset, and it's hard for us to make that mental transition.
But I love my nerd knobs. I mean, they're the best.
Yeah.
You know, it goes back to the last episode with Chad when we talked about the early days of VMware. No, it's going to fail. No, it's going to fail. That type of reaction, I think, is just human nature. Whenever there's a shift in how you do things or how you're going to do things, a lot of people, not everybody, just, you know, they kind of say, and they pucker up a little bit and don't know how to handle that.
Yeah, it's another thing that I think is fascinating for me as I join the new company, right? The culture originates out of an interesting idea. So one thing that is fascinating is Pivotal is built off of open source software. And companies that are built off of open source software, they're ridiculously hard business models, right? Because, you know, it's not like... It's not like your IP is closed. Here you go. Here's where you get it. The IP is inherently open, right? So you've got companies that have built around open source software that are like, we run a service on it. So that's like Google and Facebook and others. And their business model works great because their business isn't the software. It's what they do with the software, right? Then you've got other companies that say, we license support. So that's, you know, Red Hat and other examples, right? Hortonworks is an example. Pivotal Way is different. So we sell like the, here's our enterprise distribution of Cloud Foundry, here's our enterprise distribution of Kubernetes and PKS, right? But the thing that's fascinating is the company was born where one of the things that we do is teach people how to write software in new ways. So in other words, a core part of what we do is technology, but a core part is methodology. And one thing that is so fun about showing up to a Pivotal office, every office every day is filled not with Pivotal employees, but with customers who are there learning how to write software in new ways.
So I have a question about that. When they leave,
it's so cool.
When they leave, does it stick?
Yeah. So in fact, it's awesome is many of them, when they leave, they actually build their own labs, Pivotal Labs like thing wherever they go. So like when you go to visit Ford, Ford has got a place called Ford Labs, right? When you go and you visit, Vanguard, they've got like a labs environment because they learned that basically that the approaches of paired programming, of the agile methodology that we use, the way that we have kind of customer intent driven design, all of those things are like stick with them pretty permanently. What does happen is that periodically those people come back to like recharge, Mark, because everything's continuously evolving, right? So like there's new tools, new techniques. It's really, really fascinating. By the way, if you get a chance, anyone, this is an open invite, and you look up like a Pivotal office in your neighborhood near you, go and come for a visit. Say hello. Say Chad Sackett said to come visit. You'll see something really cool, which is you'll go in and you'll go like, oh my God, who are all these people? And you'll find, you know, you shouldn't interrupt them while they're working, but they'll be happy to tell you like what they're working on. I'm working for HSBC and I'm working on a new mobile app. I'm at Boeing and I'm designing, you know, new airplane, you know, control systems. It's really cool.
Road trip to Chicago.
Yeah, I have a meeting this Thursday down in Chicago. I should schedule some time. It's only a few blocks away from the lab here in Chicago. Is in the Merchandise Mart, and my meeting is only a few blocks away. I should just come in a little early and visit the
and there's a Garrett's popcorn right there.
I mean, there's a Garrett's. I'm close enough to Chicago. There's a Garrett's popcorn everywhere.
Yeah. Their stand-ups are really interesting. If you can make it down for their morning stand-up, and their breakfast is pretty.
That's part of the technique, right? So a stand-up basically starts at like 9:05, and they're very time limited because like one thing that everyone hates is meetings, right? So. But basically having everybody do a morning stand-up that's part of a team that's working on something before they break apart and go and do their work, and basically say, here are the problems that I'm going to solve today. Here's what we're going to go off and do as a pair. And you see the technique on how they do it in like a speed round. It's pretty cool.
All right. So we're a little bit over and want to respect your time for the second episode, Chad. For those who didn't listen to last week's episode, where can people find you?
Yeah, guys, thank you for having me, first of all. So, and I will hopefully be on much sooner than a year from now, and I want to be on that 100th episode, so sign me up. But if people want to stalk me, they can find me on Twitter, at SAKACC, and you can find my blog at virtualgeek.io.
And then Mark, where can people stalk you?
You can stalk me on the Twitters as at Cincy Storage, and you can find all my other various links around there too.
So in the show notes of this episode, you'll find the RSS feed and as well as the iTunes feed. Text that to your mom or your dad, or even your sister or brother.
Google, Keith? What about Google? Why are you hating on Google?
Oh, you could Google it. Either way, share the podcast. That's all I care. They don't have to be technologists to enjoy the soothing sounds of Mark May and the CTO advisor.
If you have a newborn baby, they love the sound of her voice.
The dulcet tones of your voice.
Yes, it puts them to sleep all the time.
Yes.
Until then, we'll talk to you next CTO Advisor podcast. Thanks.